A new version of the health care bill being discussed in the Senate has emerged. A number of Democratic senators have helped to water down the bill to win over the 60 votes needed to pass legislation. Proponents of a Medicare-like system and those hoping for a publicly run health insurance option will be disappointed, as private health insurance companies are now expected to deliver what is still being called a public option. The plans will be approved by the Office of Personnel Management, the same government entity that manages health care for government employees and members of Congress. Another huge disappointment for progressives is an amendment similar to the so-called STUPAC amendment in the House version of the health care bill that would place tight restrictions on reproductive health services like abortion that are covered by federally subsidized plans. In exchange for weakening the public option beyond recognition, some liberal lawmakers hope to achieve compromises on other fronts, such as allowing Americans to begin buying into the Medicare program starting at age 55 instead of 65, and expanding the Medicaid program for low-income Americans. Joining me to dissect the bill is Steffi Woolhandler. She's a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and also co-founder of Physicians for a National Health Program. Welcome to Uprising, Steffi.
My pleasure.
Thanks so much for joining us. So is it accurate what I mentioned, that even though this version of the bill is still using the term public option, that it's really now going to actually be run by private health insurance companies?
That's true. What the public option is going to be for folks under the age of 55 is just a menu of private plans that they can buy. It's similar to the menu that's offered to federal workers. Of course, federal workers actually get money to buy the health insurance. They don't just get the menu, but they get the money. So other folks under the age of 55, if you're uninsured, you will be offered this menu of nonprofit plans. The issue about the folks over the age of 55 being able to buy into Medicare is actually quite bad as well. One of the better provisions of the reform legislation was that there was a prohibition against charging older people more than twice as much as you charge younger people in the individual market. But by saying everyone over the age of 55 in the individual market can be picked up by Medicare, you've really let the insurance industry off the hook. That is, the highest cost patients in the individual market will be taken off their hands and paid for by the taxpayers, and they'll remain the only option. Private insurance will remain the only option for people under the age of 55 and anyone who gets their insurance through their employer. Another way of saying that is, if you now have private health insurance and you don't like it, you're forced to keep it. The buy-in to Medicare is only for the over 55, and it's only for people who are not offered private health insurance through an employer. Mm-hmm. So it's turning into really just a subsidy to private health insurance. The taxpayers will pay for the high-cost patients, and the health insurance industry can take care of the lower-cost patients. I want to remind people that at its core, this bill takes $450 billion in new taxes from the taxpayers and hands it over to private health insurance as a subsidy. So the core of the bill is a financial strengthening of the private health insurance industry, and even this measure that many people liked, that was one of the small things that was good about the plan, that is forcing the insurance industry to lower the prices for older enrollees, that's been taken out of the bill, essentially.
Well, explain the subsidy a little bit further. Is this what the government would offer as help for low-income Americans who cannot buy insurance? Because this bill, I'm assuming, also still has the mandate that all Americans have insurance. Is that true?
That's true. I live in Massachusetts, where we really have a very similar plan in place, and people do get subsidies if your income is less than 300% of poverty. The problem is the subsidies are not very large. So you might get several thousand dollars in subsidy, but your insurance plan might be $10,000 or even $15,000. So that the mandate forces many low-income people to continue to take thousands of dollars out of their pocket and hand it to the private health insurance industry. So, in effect, the taxpayers are giving money to private health insurance. the individual family is being forced to hand over thousands more to private health insurance industry. The individual mandate is at the core of the bill and is talking about forcing taxpayers and uninsured individuals to pay money to private health insurance.
What do you make of the words of Senator Max Baucus, who's been a leading figure in the healthcare reform movement, coming from the state of Montana and getting a huge numbers of campaign contributions from insurance companies? He is claiming that this compromise bill is the only kind of proposal. Well, he said it's probably the closest proposal thus far that could get the support of 60 senators. It's got legs, he says.
The issue here is what private health insurance wants. They did give Max Baucus $1.4 million in campaign contributions. But more significantly than that, Max Baucus has an assistant who's actually writing the bill. We know she's writing the bill because when you look at the documents that the Senate Finance Committee is putting out, including the so-called Baucus framework, and you right-click on the and look at the properties box, that these bills are being written on her computer. The woman's name is Elizabeth Fowler, and her previous job was as vice president of WellPoint, the nation's largest insurance company. So the insurance company is right there on the inside writing this bill. Not a word goes onto that piece of paper that they don't have an influence on. And when you look at something like the Medicare buy-in, you have to ask, well, what did the insurance industry get out of it? Because they have indeed hijacked this process and are writing the bills and are lobbying with these swing senators to get more and more and more of what the private insurance industry wants out of the bill.
My guest is Steffi Uhlhandler, a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School, co-founder of Physicians for National Health Program. We're talking about the compromise healthcare reform bill that seems to have been reached in the Senate. And, of course, if it is adopted and voted on by the Senate, it still has to be reconciled, go into conference with the House version of the bill. One of the things in the House version of the bill that did have some kind of that some progressives did like was the possibility that states individually could potentially start their own single-payer systems. What's the status of that in this bill?
Well, there was an amendment that was put forward in the House. It was defeated to allow state single-payer bills. Senator Sanders has been talking about putting an amendment forward in the Senate. We certainly expect to see that and hope that he'll do that. But the bill that seems likely to emerge from the Senate and from the conference committee will probably not have that single-payer option in it. We'd like to see it because that would allow people at the state level to continue to work on single-payer. It would make their work easier. But we doubt that that's actually going to be in the final bill. We're still hopeful, but we doubt it. I think we have to look at the totality of the bill at this point, and the totality of the bill is that it's absolutely no solution. It's going to make some people better off, some people worse off, but it's going to leave us with probably 25 million uninsured people when fully implemented in 2020. It's going to cost the taxpayers $450 billion in taxes that end up going straight to the private insurance industry as subsidies. There are many, many bad things in this bill that reflect the role of the insurance industry.
There's also the amendment that would prohibit any kind of government subsidies for plans that might offer abortion services. Again, this is similar, I think, to the House version of the bill that was put forward as a way to get the votes of pro-life, anti-abortion senators.
Well, the anti-abortion planks are still in play. That is, there within the House version, there's a complete prohibition on plans sold through the exchange covering abortion. That's obviously a major step backwards for reproductive rights. Right now, government money can't support abortions, but there's never before been a restriction on private plans. So the House bill would, for the first time, put a restriction on abortion into private health insurance plans. In the Senate, it is my understanding is it's still in play. Senator Nelson is saying he refuses to support the bill unless you get a STUPAC amendment in there. The proposals on the table is to come up with some elaborate system to try to separate the monies that are public and private so that the private plans might still offer abortions, but only out of the private monies. But that issue is still in play in the Senate bill.
So it's amazing that they're still calling the health insurance exchange, the private health insurance exchange, a public option. Steffi Woolhandler, do you see this step in the entire healthcare reform debate as basically being just really not worth carrying on anymore? And from your perspective, you'd just like to stop and start over?
Yeah, I think we need to start from scratch. We actually need to throw this bill away, and we need to start over with the Medicare for All framework, that everyone in the country would have the same type of insurance, that it'd be paid for by taxes, that the patients would have complete free choice of doctor or hospital. And the beauty of the Medicare for All approach is that you get so much on administrative savings that you can pay for the expanded access. You save $350 billion through administrative simplification, and that's the money you need to cover all of the uninsured, but also to plug the gaps in coverage for people who now have private coverage with gaps in it. So that's the direction we need to be heading, is toward that single payer. As long as we're leaving the private health insurance industry in, the bill is enormously expensive. And, one of the aspects of the bill that we haven't discussed is the fact that the new bill has 10 years of taxes in it, but only 6 years of new coverage. That is, the tax provisions go into effect immediately, but all of the coverage provisions go into effect in 2014. So the only way they even got this bill to balance financially is by putting 10 years of taxes up against 6 years of coverage. So the bill is really not affordable. Even if that was your only issue we're concerned about was cost and affordability, this bill is not affordable over the long run.
Well, Steffi Woolhandler, thank you for giving us the bad news and at least opening people's eyes to what's really going on in the Senate. Thanks so much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much. Bye-bye.
Steffi Woolhandler is a professor of medicine at Harvard Medical School and co-founder of Physicians for a National Health Program. You can find out more at pnhp.org. PNHP is one of the country's leading single-payer advocates.